confident.
Thank God it's
Friday. It's
we're heading into a sports weekend. It is the NFL divisional round. And I am hearing myself. Hopefully that gets taken care of back in the studio. I am Brett Rump, Caleb Hatch. He is handling the buttons. I am still quarantined, broadcasting live from my studio apartment on the north side. But it is a big weekend for sports. Big night last night. We've got plenty to talk about. We've got the guests to talk about it. Coming up this hour, we're going to check in with Indiana Tech men's basketball team. Ted Albert, men's basketball coach out at Indiana Tech, is going to join us. They've been on a good run of late. They've won 13 of their last 15 games, got a big win the other night. And we'll talk to Ted Albert about his basketball team coming up a little bit later this hour. Also, hour number two, Chris Denary, TV play-by-play voice for the Indiana Pacers, joins us coming up at 5:20. And Shane Alberani, preview of the Comets weekend. That will be at 5:35. It is good to have you here on this glorious but a bit chilly Friday afternoon as we head into, of course, the NFL divisional round. One of the things we'll talk about today is which quarterback in each game has the most pressure to win. And we'll talk about that and more, but we've got to start with last night. The streak is over. It is now done. I said yesterday it was 8 straight. I was wrong. It's 9 straight that Purdue had beaten the Indiana Hoosiers. Oh, I didn't get corrected by anybody all day long. I can't believe a text didn't come in and say, hey, Bozo, it's 9, it's not 8. Because I went through and counted season by season, and I could swear I counted 8. So I don't know where I missed one. But it was 9 straight that Purdue had defeated the Indiana Hoosiers. And last night, the Hoosiers did it in the most unlikely of fashion. You know, you got to figure, when you've got a star player, All-American type player in Trace Jackson Davis, all-conference, future NBA player. When you've got a guy like that who is undeniably the leader of your team, especially offensively, and he goes out and you get basically no production from him because he is sitting on the bench, and your team all of a sudden turns around and takes over the basketball game with your star on the bench, that was something last night for the Indiana Hoosiers. And, you know, a guy who has, boy, he has had it tough during his career. He has been maligned more than once. He's a kid that is from the West Lafayette area and went to Bloomington, got chastised quite a bit by his hometown for leaving the Boilermaker country and going down to play for the Indiana Hoosiers. But Rob Phinisee was the hero last night. 17 big points in the first half. And then, of course, the big bucket that won it for the Hoosiers. And if you were listening to Don Fisher, our Monday guest on 15 Minutes with Fish, this is how it sounded.
And Galloway is going to inbound it here. Indiana can't turn it over. 19.3 seconds to go. The inbound, Galloway finds Rob Phinisee, who fires the three in.
Oh! He hit it! Phinisee, his 20th point of the game. Indiana leads by one.
There you go. It was Indiana getting the lead and then sealing it with a couple of free throws later, and Indiana defeats Purdue 68-65. Trace Jackson Davis picked up his second foul with 14:24 remaining in the first half, and at that point, Purdue was leading 13-8 and eventually took a 16-8 lead at the 13:35 mark. And that was with Trace Jackson Davis sitting on the bench, and the Hoosiers went on a 27-8 run. In fact, the next 13 points after it was 16-8, the next 13 points that Indiana scored all came from Rob Phinisee. He had 13 straight to turn a 16-8 deficit into a 22-21 deficit. Eventually, Indiana ended up with a 27-8 run with Trace Jackson Davis sitting on the bench and Rob Phinisee, who had the 17 in the first half, and the only three points he had the entire second half was that corner jumper that won it for the Hoosiers as Indiana held on after leading 37-28 at the break. They hold on, defeat Purdue, and quite honestly, I think it's fair to ask the question, is this the biggest win for the Hoosiers since Kentucky? and Christian Watford. I went through, looked at big wins for the Hoosiers over the last decade. Basically, since the Watford shot that beat Kentucky, everybody remembers that. It's probably one of the greatest moments in Indiana basketball history, even though it wasn't a national championship. As far as regular season wins, undoubtedly that is the biggest moment ever for Indiana basketball. But what's happened over the last decade since? Is there a game that would top what we saw last night? And there's so many reasons that I think this is a huge game. It's not recency bias, in my opinion, because this was an Indiana team that has struggled to get victories over top programs. They had the nemesis with Purdue, 9 straight that Purdue had beaten them. It was the first matchup with Mike Woodson, the former Indiana player on the Indiana bench, against Matt Painter, former Purdue player on the Purdue bench. I think this game took on a lot of added significance. It's kind of like the Michigan-Ohio State game for Jim Harbaugh. You get hired as the coach at Michigan, and you've got one job, and that is do not get beat every year by Ohio State. So it was really important for Jim Harbaugh to finally break that streak and defeat Ohio State this year. Well, I think it's similar for Indiana. And you look at what Indiana's done over the last decade after beating Kentucky. They did get a win over number one Michigan back in 2012-2013. That was back in January, I believe, of 2013. College game day for ESPN was there. Huge game. 81-73, the Hoosiers knocked off the Wolverines that day, but it's been so long ago, most of us have forgotten about it. You know, what was interesting is they also won the last game of the regular season that year at Michigan, so they actually beat the Wolverines twice that season. They had a win over number four Michigan State in East Lansing back in 2013. In the 2013-14 season, they got a win over Wisconsin, who was ranked number three at the time, 75-72. The following season, they beat number four Iowa, 85-78. Of course, they had the big win over Kansas out in Hawaii early in the season. In 2016, they defeated the Kansas Jayhawks when Kansas was number two. IU then became the number three ranked team in the country. And we all remember what happened in IU's next game against the Mastodons after they got ranked number three in the country. The Mastodons defeated them in overtime at the Allen County War Memorial Coliseum. IU over North Carolina, that was back, what, about 6 years ago. They beat the Tar Heels 76-67. North Carolina was number three at the time. A couple years ago, they beat Michigan State by a point. Michigan State was number six. And then last year, IU won at Iowa. And that was that crazy game where Indiana just got on fire and hardly could miss, just dominated with the best half they had all season probably against Iowa and won it 81-69. But I don't know if any of those actually topped the importance of the game last night, because it came against Purdue, it came against the top five team, it came at home, engaged the fans, engaged the students, brought some belief in what Mike Woodson is doing. I thought overall, huge win for IU under so many different circumstances, including Trace Jackson Davis having to be on the bench. The fact that it was Rob Vinicy who stepped up, a guy who has stuck with the program throughout his career. Hey, let's be honest. Fans haven't always been nice toward Rob Vinicy. He knows it. And last night, little bit of redemption for Rob Vinicy. Things went well last night for the Hoosiers, Caleb.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned they swept Iowa last year. They swept Michigan State back when they had Romeo Langford and Juwan Morgan, 2018-2019 season. I mean, you could argue the win at Iowa in 2016 to claim the outright Big Ten title. This is probably the biggest win since then, that Yogi Ferrell-led team back in 2016.
And at home. And I mean, that's the thing. They had the court storming after the game where everybody stormed the court to make sure to spread some Omicron. But it was, it's one of those things where Indiana finally got that monkey off their back. Believe me, there was some shame and embarrassment in losing to your in-state rival 9 straight times. And to get that off their back, you could just see that was part of it. I mean, the fact that Purdue was in the top five and that, number four ranked in the country, and that Indiana finally got the win, and it happens to be in Mike Woodson's first game. And, you know, Caleb, I don't know if you saw it, but after the game, you could see the emotion for Mike Woodson and what this game means. This rivalry is special to him. This game meant more to him, because you could tell by the reaction. He's not a guy that often has a lot of expression, and he's not real outgoing in his emotions. But last night after the game, definitely was. You could see this game, how important it was to the Indiana coach to start his career at Indiana with a win over Purdue. And, of course, like I said, Mike Woodson, very familiar with what this rivalry means to many of the Hoosier historians, the people who have followed this program through many, many years. This game really does mean something special to them.
Yeah, you know, having a coach who understands the rivalry for the first time in, what, 20-plus years, that truly gets it, I mean, that helps. And I have to say, you know, when Trace Jackson Davis went out with foul trouble early on in this one, two quick fouls, and then Xavier Johnson stepped up, he's hitting shots, he went to the bench, Rob Fennessy was just lights out the first half. You knew that Purdue would make their run, but the fact that Iowa was able to withstand that, I think, is what impressed me the most. And I get it. It's a win at home over your rival. You know, I don't think anyone has the expectation that IU is going to be able to go into Mackey and pull off another win at the end of the year. I don't think anyone believes that. But just to get this and to stay in contention in the Big Ten, I mean, look, you got to look at the Big Ten standings. IU and Purdue are right there. And you got to challenge Illinois. They're starting to pull away from the pack here.
The what about the job by Michael Durr? How important was that pickup to have Michael Durr available last night when Trace Jackson Davis got into the foul trouble? You know, I look at Purdue, and I do think they didn't force the ball to Zach Edey enough last night. In fact, I'll give you a list of players that had as many or more field goal attempts than Zach Edey, and it includes Mason Gillis, Jaden Ivey, Isaiah Thompson, Sasha Stefanovic, all of those players. In fact, every other starter had at least as many field goals or more attempted last night than Zach Edey, but Edey was 5 for 6, 9 rebounds. He was a force that Indiana had trouble with, and I don't know if Purdue really forced the ball into him as much as they probably could have or should have, because Indiana had no answer for him. Michael Durr was the closest thing, and Michael Durr did play a valuable part in this win last night.
Yeah, I mentioned on the show yesterday that if Trace Jackson Davis gets in early foul trouble, and I couldn't believe that TJD was guarding Zach Edey early on in the game. I mean, that was part of the problem.
Oh, I know.
There. That was
we
like,
talked about that yesterday, Caleb. We said that that was going to be a problem. In fact, I said I think they'll use Durr against Edey, but they didn't bring Durr in because Edey started, and so it was kind of an odd point in the rotation. But you're exactly right. Trace Jackson Davis cannot match up with Zach Edey. He could match up if it was Travion Williams, but he got stuck at the beginning of the game on Edey, and Edey made him pay.
Yeah, so, I mean, Durr came in. The stat line doesn't look like much. 24 minutes, 4 points, no rebounds, 2 steals, 2 blocks. But, I mean, those blocks were key, and he was able to spell Trace Jackson Davis for quite a while in a game that he was largely ineffective. I mean, it's wild to think that IU had 2 players in double figures. Trace Jackson Davis had 4 fouls, as many fouls as he had points, and the fact they won the game. I mean, it's wild, and it shows where this team has come defensively, and it shows the depth of this team is, it's not on par with Purdue, but bench points, they torched Purdue. I mean, Purdue had 4 bench
yeah.
points.
Yeah, and a lot of that was Rob Fennessy. But when you look at the bench, 24 minutes from Michael Durr, 24 minutes from Trey Galloway, 26 minutes from Rob Fennessy. In fact, I will give you a list of players that played more than Trace Jackson Davis last night. And it's Miller Kopp, Race Thompson, Xavier Johnson, Parker Stewart, Jordan Geronimo, Michael Durr, Trey Galloway, Rob Fennessy. That tells you kind of an idea. In fact, it's easier just to tell you the one player that played last night that didn't play more than Trace, and that was Tamar Bates. But that's how little Trace Jackson Davis had an impact in this game. I mean, he finishes with 4 points, 1 rebound, and every time he stepped on the floor, it seemed like within a minute he had a foul, and somehow Indiana overcame it And, you know, a lot of credit to those guys that we consider role players. But like Jordan Geronimo, you know, he played a role last night. And even though he doesn't fill up the stat line, it was like, okay, but he's, you know, in rotation, picking up guys. He's able to pick up guys on the switch, on the perimeter. You know, Miller Kopp, I didn't think had much of an impact in this game. His 16 minutes, he was 0 for 2 from the field. You know, I keep saying, how long does he stay in the starting lineup? But I'm not sure who do you put in the starting lineup unless you go really guard heavy and put a guy like Finnessy into the starting lineup, or maybe a Trey Galloway. But you know, I know Miller Kopp is supposed to be that guy that can help to create balance and space the floor for Trayce Jackson-Davis because of his three-point shooting ability, but we've not seen it. I mean, they've not set up shots a lot for Miller Kopp, and to me, if he's not going to hit threes, he just doesn't seem to have a real active impact in the game, in my opinion. What do you think about Kopp and his minutes for IU, Caleb?
I think it's more my takeaway is, as Rob Finnessy played himself into a starting role after last night. Yes, Xavier Johnson played well, didn't turn the ball over, but with the way Finnessy played, I mean, you have to look at the consideration, at least if you're Mike Woodson, of inserting Finnessy into the starting lineup.
Well, Caleb, you want to talk about turning the ball over? Do you know how many times Indiana, who, you know, we've talked about their problems with turnovers. Do you know how many times Indiana turned the ball over the entire game? Entire game last night.
Three times.
Three. Two of them were Trayce Jackson-Davis in his 11 minutes. Three turnovers. I mean, that's ridiculous. That basically, in a nutshell, other than Rob Finnessy, I mean, you know, not giving it up to Purdue because they are so good in transition. We talked about that yesterday, that Purdue in transition, they set up three-point shots out of transition. They've got Jaden Ivey, who's great in the open court. You just can't have those live ball turnovers, and Indiana avoided them. Only three turnovers the entire game, while Purdue turned it over 12 times. But we'll talk more about this one coming up later in the show. Your thoughts on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 468-6862. We always like to hear from you. It's a big sports weekend. We've got things happening tonight. A lot of hoops. We'll tell you about it when we come back. Ted Albert, coach of the Indiana Tech Warriors men's basketball team, will join us coming up in about 10, 11 minutes from now. We'll get an update on some great college basketball we've got here in this town. Of course, the St. Francis Cougars, the Indiana Tech Warriors, and tonight out at the Coliseum, the Purdue-Fort Wayne Mastodons will be in action. They've got another Horizon League matchup with Robert Morris. You know, these two teams pretty familiar with one another. They just played on January 9th out in Moon Township, Pennsylvania, in the Pittsburgh area. Mastodons won that one 76-70. Here's what's crazy. In the stat line, I mean, if you look at the stats, you think there's no possible way that Robert Morris lost this game. Robert Morris outshot the Mastodons 51% to 47.3%. From the three-point line, Robert Morris 35%, Mastodons 29.2%. At the free throw line, Robert Morris was better, 76.5% to 70.8%. Robert Morris out-rebounded the Dons 32 to 25. And Robert Morris, though, turned it over 16 times. That was the difference. Robert Morris turned it over twice as much as the Dons did. That tells you the impact turnovers can make in a basketball game. And that's why Indiana only turning it over three times last night was so important for the Hoosiers to get that win over the Purdue Boilermakers. But what a crazy night in the Horizon League. There was some league action, and Milwaukee, who they've struggled. And, of course, they got Patrick Baldwin Jr., who's going to be a lottery pick. His dad is the coach of Milwaukee, so a lottery pick playing in the Horizon League, but he's not playing hardly at all this year. I mean, he's only played a handful of games, and he didn't play last night. And yet Milwaukee, without their superstar, beat the league leader, the only unbeaten in the league, Oakland, who the Dons just lost to over the weekend. They beat them, and beat them bad. It was 88-78, and the game really wasn't that close. Oakland just could not hit a shot in the first half, and just too big of a hill to come back in the second half. So Oakland gets handed their first league loss. And then you had Northern Kentucky and UIC. UIC led this one, and then Northern Kentucky, a big rally, and thought they won it at the buzzer. They got a slam dunk at the buzzer. And then the officials waved it off. And so the game-winning dunk was waved off. It went overtime. And after the heartbreak for Northern Kentucky, they ended up coming back and still winning it in overtime on the road at UIC, 74-70. So crazy night last night in Horizon League basketball. But tonight, 7 o'clock tip, it'll be on the special stream that we've got at 1380thefan.com. So we can make way for high school basketball here on the radio. Big one tonight, Connor Asijan in action with his Central Noble Cougars visiting Eastside. Michael McIntyre has the call of all the action. And Dute is going to be handling things at the Pizza Hut for the Parkview Sports Medicine postgame show. And so Dute will be joined by Mac once Mac can make it over there from the game. But tonight, high school basketball right here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM with Central Noble Eastside. Huge game in the NECC. So this weekend, divisional round of the playoffs, and I started to think of all these matchups and said, okay, let's go through each game and say which of the two quarterbacks in each of the games has the most pressure to win based on where they're at in their career, maybe how they were acquired. You got the first game of the weekend is going to be Cincinnati and Tennessee. So it's Joe Burrow, Ryan Tannehill. This is interesting. Joe Burrow, I think, has pressure, but I don't know that it's on him yet, because he's still so early in his career. But, you know, you're going to build a roster around him. You expect him to be your franchise guy. Took him with the top draft pick. So, you know, Joe Burrow is a guy I think that will feel pressure. But I still feel like Ryan Tannehill is one of those guys that hasn't delivered in the big way when called upon in a playoff game. And so I will say, out of these two, Caleb, I think Burrow's time is coming. And if it comes now, it's probably earlier than expected. But I think the one out of these two with the pressure is Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah, I would agree. And look, Tennessee is the one seed. I think everyone forgets about that. They're the number one seed in the AFC. And just because, you know, the Bengals and Joe Burrow, obviously the Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes, the Bills, you know, teams playing well and teams closing the year strong. Tannehill's got to get something done, because this seems like a setup for Cincinnati to surprise and maybe even blow out the Titans in this matchup.
Yeah, and if you lose the quarterback matchup, it's not going to look good on Ryan Tannehill. And here's the other thing. You've got the return of Derrick Henry. Everybody's focused on that return. But if Cincinnati comes out, gets a 2-touchdown lead or maybe even a 3-touchdown lead, can they start to take that aspect out of the game and force Tannehill to be the one to beat them? All right, let's move to the second game Saturday. I think this is interesting. Who has more pressure to win, Aaron Rodgers or Jimmy Garoppolo? This one is tough for me, Caleb, because for different reasons, I think there's a lot of pressure on both these quarterbacks. For Aaron Rodgers, I don't know if this is the last run in Green Bay. I don't know what his future holds, but it's been a long time since he's gotten a chance to touch that Lombardi trophy, and he knows that the days are kind of ticking away. You don't have a lot of opportunities. This may be the best team he plays on for the rest of his career. And then you got Jimmy Garoppolo, who might be playing as an audition for the offseason market. So both of these quarterbacks do have pressure, but I think because it is in Green Bay and Green Bay's the number one seed, I will say the greater pressure falls onto Aaron Rodgers.
I think this one, it's clear it's Aaron Rodgers. Like you mentioned, you don't know how many more opportunities he's going to have with Green Bay and that Green Bay is going to have with him. I think the pressure for him to not only get to the Super Bowl, but win the Super Bowl this year is growing, and I think it's something that you have to think when you look back on Rodgers' legacy. Everyone says, well, he's one of the best quarterbacks of all time, but then you throw out, well, he only has one Super Bowl
win. The rings, baby.
Yeah, exactly. So now for Jimmy Garoppolo,
that's how we judge it.
For Jimmy Garoppolo, you look at it more of, you know, win this game, and it forces the Niners organization to rethink the whole Trey Lance pick and what they're going to do there. But I think ultimately the pressure's on Aaron Rodgers. He has to win. He has to get to the Super Bowl at minimum. I feel like for his legacy and for his career, I mean, he wants that other title. It's crazy that his last Super Bowl win was basically over a decade ago. And here we are.
Well, and the other thing, too, is I think a lot of this comes down to who's healthy for San Francisco, because there's a lot of players kind of on the bubble that are questionable going into that game Saturday night. All right, so Matt Stafford takes on Tom Brady. A lot of pressure on both these guys. I'm gonna, the easy answer here, Caleb, is Matt Stafford, obviously, because he's gotten out of Detroit. He's got a roster built around him by an owner that's willing to pay money, that has gone out and picked up superstars. Now, when you say pay money, they do have a salary cap, but they've been willing to go out and pay top dollar to bring in superstars. And so you've got Matt Stafford for the Rams. Everybody, it's very easy to say, oh, he's got all the pressure in the world, because this is his chance now to what he can do in a playoff run. But I look at the other side, and I think, Tom Brady knows that he's running down on time, and he wants to collect rings, and he probably knows how many back-to-back champions there's been, and how often it's happened, and when it's happened, and when it happened last. And, those are the type of things that motivate Tom Brady. But when it comes to pressure, I think ultimately the pressure would be internal for Tom Brady, but it would be external for Matt Stafford, a fan base that says, okay, we went out and got you. You're supposed to be our upgrade. You're supposed to be the guy that takes us there. So I think the pressure is on Matt Stafford.
Yeah, I would agree. Tom Brady, he's got house money with all his Super Bowl championships. For Matthew Stafford, I mean, look, they made this big trade in the offseason, the Rams did, to get Matthew Stafford from the Lions, in hopes that he would be an improvement over Jared Goff, who already took them to a Super Bowl, mind you, just a couple seasons ago. And the pressure, I think, is on Stafford to perform. Now, the pieces they've added around, this season alone with Odell Beckham Jr., Von Miller, I mean, that's worked out, getting Cam Akers back and as good as he looked in the wild card game against Arizona. I think that's helpful. That helps establish the run even more. But the pressure is absolutely on Matthew Stafford to get this win in a big game.
Okay, so Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes to finish off the weekend Sunday night. What a great game this is going to be. I think it's undoubtedly, in my mind, the pressure is on Patrick Mahomes. He doesn't have the same running game. He's got weapons on the outside. He's got to be able to throw it to be successful. And let's be honest, Mahomes' magic hasn't been consistent over the course of the year. And so, I look at Josh Allen, and I think he's got a defense that I think is better than what Kansas City's defense can be. I think for Josh Allen, if you lose and you lose on the road to Patrick Mahomes and a Chiefs organization that has been as successful as they have been over the last couple of years, it's not a bad loss. But for Patrick Mahomes, he's clearly got to step up to keep the Chiefs season alive at home. So I'm going to say the pressure is on Mahomes.
I'm going to go the opposite, and here's why. So Mahomes already has the Super Bowl, so you can't hold that over his head. They just went to the Super Bowl last season, so this team is still capable. And, Josh Allen is kind of one of the new hot names, along with Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert as quarterbacks in the NFL. And Josh Allen, I think, has got to break through in this one. I get it. It's on the road. It's at Kansas City. Patrick Mahomes is a quarterback of the Chiefs. A lot of things working against you there, but I think Josh Allen ultimately has the pressure to win this matchup for Buffalo to break through and to be a true contender in the AFC, not just now, but for many, many years to come.
46862, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. You can let us know what you think about this weekend's matchups. Hey, Ted Albert's going to join us next, coach of the Indiana Tech Warriors men's basketball team. We're going to be joined by Chris Denary, TV play-by-play voice of the Indiana Pacers. Coming up in our next hour, he will join us at 5:20 on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. Right now, we are pleased to be joined by the men's basketball coach at Indiana Tech. Nice run going right now, and a good, impressive win that they had over Cornerstone. We want to talk about it with Coach Ted Albert. Good afternoon, Coach.
Hey, Brad, how you doing?
I'm doing well, and you know what? I follow things that are happening, and as an old big man that would hang out around the basket when I played back in the day, I might be crazy, but when I look at box scores, one of the first things I do is I look at rebounding. Because that is where the grunt work is done. That's where the energy work is done. man, you impressed me against Cornerstone when I looked at that number and saw the job you did on the boards. And I thought, man, a team that out-rebounds their opponent by a margin of 47-30, that coach has to be on my show. That's getting it done on the glass.
Well, I think we're on the same wavelength there, because that's certainly one of our top priorities is controlling the glass and points in the paint. Those are two big keys for us. And I mean, if you would have told me before the game, that's one of those stats where if you would have told me that was the margin, I would have said that we're probably in a pretty good spot to close that one out. So thankfully we were.
And, you know, what was impressive is you had Josh Klein got 10. Grant Smith picked up 9 boards. Stein had 9 boards, 6 from McKinney. I mean, you had a lot of guys that got in there and got that work done on the glass. Pretty impressive. But that's a good win over Cornerstone. What else pleased you with the game the other night?
I would probably just say the ability to control the pace. I thought that Corey, our point guard, and then the other guys that helped step in for him really did a good job of controlling the pace. And, you know, we're one of those teams that likes to grind it out. That's just our makeup. And when we're scoring in the 60s and 70s, we're in a really good spot. And when you go back and look at some of our losses this year, a lot of those numbers, especially of our opponents, are higher than those. And so that's where we have to really maintain our focus. So I thought pace of play was really good. And defensive end, I thought we just did a really good job of locking into scout and being prepared and making sure we stayed together. And I thought we did a good job of that.
I'm not going to say you had a slow start to the season, but somewhat of a neutral start, starting 3-4, but you've won 13 of 15 since. So obviously things have gotten better. You've cleaned up something or have played better basketball, or I never want to say played weaker opponents, but you've won 13 out of 15. That's saying something. What's the difference with your team?
You know, if I knew exactly what that was, I'm hoping to implement that so that we don't continue to do that next year. We're just a slow starter. We've got, you know, certain makeup of individuals that sometimes it just takes a little bit longer to get comfortable. And I'll say, too, you know, we have a top 15 strength of schedule in the country, and we do that intentionally, and we play a really tough competition early in the year. And typically it's going to be on the road or a neutral site. So I think that we kind of take some lumps early, and certainly we'd like to turn some of those into wins, but I think our guys have really started to buy in and lock in, and now we're getting to the point now where we're in single digits for regular season or guaranteed games left. So we've got to make sure that we're getting better each night.
Grant Smith is a guy that leads a balanced attack at 15 points a game, but also one of those guys at 7.2 rebounds. I know how important he is to you. What can you tell us about Grant Smith?
Yeah, G's just tough. And we can tell he gets a certain look in his eye, and you can just tell it's going to be one of those nights for Grant. And he's done a really good job, too, of now. So I think him taking a bigger leadership role and willing to do some of those other things as far as guarding some of the other team's best offensive players, stepping in and gang rebounding and making sure that he's, you know, helping on the glass. And not only that, when he does that, he's so good in transition. When we get a stop and we're not taking the ball out of the net, when he gets his own rebound, we're tough getting downhill.
Well, and it's tough, or it's something when you see a guy who is second on the team in assists, leads in reboundings, leads in steals. I mean, not leading in blocks, but he's top for you in a lot of different categories. Pretty important player. So tomorrow, you've got a team that the Mastodons are familiar with. In fact, Everybody in town's pretty familiar with. You're familiar with. You've played them before. University of Michigan Dearborn. A lot of points generally scored when you take the court with the Wolverines.
Yeah, they just play so hard, and they're going to leave it all out there, well coached. Just one of those teams that's going to make sure that they're going to, you know, pick up the pace a little bit. And that's where I think tomorrow is going to be one of those. The first time we played them, we talked about it today in scouting report. You know, they scored 76 points the first time we played them, and that's on the higher end for us, especially taking pride on the defensive end. And you know how hard conference road wins are. So we've got to make sure that we're locked in to scout and make them beat us in uncharacteristic ways and come out on top on the road.
Wilco, congratulations on the win earlier this week against Cornerstone. Best of luck coming up tomorrow on the road at the University of Michigan Dearborn. Appreciate you taking time to talk about your team and continued success.
Yeah, thanks, Brett. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, absolutely. That is Ted Albert, coach of the Indiana Tech Warriors men's basketball team. They are now on the year after that 3-4 start. They've turned it around, 16-6 overall. They're 10-2 in the conference. They've won their last four. And so they will be home a couple of times next week. If you'd like to check them out at the Schaefer Center, they will be home against Aquinas College. Did I say that? Aquinas? I don't know how to say that.
I think it's Aquinas. Name. I'm not sure. But Aquinas, I think that sounds right.
Okay, they're playing the Q. We'll just call them the Q next week on Wednesday, 8 p.m. at the Schaefer Center. And then they're also home next weekend on Saturday taking on Rochester. That game will start at 3 o'clock. So if you want to check out some Indiana Tech Warriors basketball, you got a couple of opportunities next week. You got a chance to see the Mastodonite out at the Coliseum, Horizon League basketball action against Robert Morris. These two teams, like I said, just met January 9th, very familiar with one another. They played in the Pittsburgh area. And so now, you know, you'd think that we were talking with the Coach Kaufman and saying, okay, this is now a chance to play a conference opponent for the second time. But they did play Cleveland State twice. They played them back-to-back because they had that extra game stuffed in there. But again, that what you learn from the first game, then what you adjust to for the second game, it'll be interesting to see. Because Robert Morris, who has played a lot of close games, I mean, we're talking overtime, we're talking final possession games, and they've been on the short end more often than not. They were 0-7 in the conference, but if you look at them, it's like, man, this is a dangerous lineup, and they're always in the game late. But they finally got over the hump, and sometimes that's scary when a team finally that has struggled to finish a game with a winning possession finally gets that feeling and learns how to win. It can be somewhat dangerous. So a tough one for the Mastodons at home out at the Coliseum, a 7 o'clock tip. Mike Moss is filling in for me since I'm on quarantine. Mike Moss will be with Justin Kenny. Nice that Justin gets to go back. But Justin will be on the tonight it's not Justin. Justin comes in on Sunday. Tonight, it's actually Art Salzberg with Mike Moss. So you got a couple of like living legends here in Fort Wayne that will be calling the Mastodons game tonight. And that broadcast is going to be available at 1380thefan.com. It's a stream-only game because we've got high school basketball tonight that takes the airwaves. So you can catch it on the stream at 1380thefan.com. Or you can be there in person to catch Mastodons basketball out there at the Allen County War Memorial Coliseum. Tickets are going to be available at the door. And so, I'll be like maybe some of you listening to it tonight and enjoying the golden tones of Mike Moss. So hopefully the game goes well. Hopefully the Dons get a win. I hate that I'm missing it. That is Life with COVID, Part 2.
Podcasts by Federated Media.